Welcome back to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. I'm Rob Brown here with my wonderful co-host, Chelsea Summers. And today we're doing something we haven't done for a while. It's a listener Q&A episode, question and answer. These have come from firm leaders, advisors, and people who are clearly thinking hard about where the profession is headed. They love the show, they're tuning in, and they enjoy what we share with them about the stories behind the numbers. Chelsea, lovely to have you with us. And do you like these Q&A things?
I do. What I really love is that these questions are not tactical in the weeds. They're really structural on the profession as a whole. They're asking things like, are we building firms that actually work for the future that we're talking about?
Ooh, that's so good. And we're going to be asking each other some questions. You've got answers. I've got answers. We both work in the accounting world. We talk to lots of people. You've got a lot of great data behind this. So let's jump right into question one. And the theme here is around talent. It's a recurring theme, isn't it? And we're going to call out some of our wonderful questioners. This comes from Ivan Muldoon, and he asks whether the talent shortage is actually real or whether firms are just resisting changes in the how and why their teams are built. What do you think?
I think the shortage is real within a traditional firm model. The data makes it clear that many firms are struggling because they're trying to preserve legacy assumptions, things about location, career paths, and utilization, instead of redesigning work. So I think global talent only is becoming a real advantage when firms stop treating it as temporary relief and start building it into their operating models. Firms are also rethinking their staffing in terms of location and in background, like hiring from non-accounting graduates, and they're feeling the talent shortage a lot less.
I was interviewing somebody just yesterday around busy season, and he said the problem with it is that so many firms go into the next busy season with exactly the same tech stack and the same policies and procedures and processes and everything as last year, hoping something will change. And it makes me wonder with regarding talent, do you think firms are moving fast enough to keep up with how the profession is changing, or are they relying on what they did before?
I think for most firms, they're not moving fast enough. But I think the awareness has accelerated inside of most firms. I think we're at a moment where firms know that something has to change, even if they don't fully know all the pieces that need to go into that puzzle. And I think that's usually the inflection point, is that the knowledge that there is a change that is needed.
Yeah, and it is certainly competitive out there for the very best talent. And all these firms, Chelsea, they have growth aspirations, certainly. And to do that, AI will take up some of the heavy lifting, but you need people.
Right, exactly. And the technology could do some, but it's not going to do everything.
Yeah. So this next question is from Chad Persons, and he asks where growth actually breaks down first. So we just talked about growth and all these wonderful aspirational plans to get bigger and better and scale. So is it breaking down at leadership level? Is it breaking down in capacity or positioning and branding or lack of a growth system? What are you seeing?
I think it's leadership focus nearly every single time.
Okay.
Firms are saying that they want to grow, but partners' calendars still reflect the billable hours and a seller-doer mindset. Growth isn't stalling because firms don't know what to do. It stalls because nobody has time to do what they need to do inside of the firm. They don't have the authority to push through the changes or the incentives to own growth at the partnership level.
And you've spoken before, Chelsea, about the transparency required from leadership, really, to be honest about the direction and where the firm's doing well and where it's going and what's happening behind the scenes. I'm certainly seeing that leaders are not visible enough in tough times. So they are not putting the messages out there. The internal comms are not great, never mind the external messages that the firm should be giving out. So I completely agree with your leadership focus every time.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Let me ask you a question. In your conversations with firm leaders, what tensions do you hear that rarely get acknowledged publicly?
Ooh, tensions. I'm feeling that there's a tension or a gap, if you like, between what firms say they want and what they're actually doing. I'll give you an example. Scale, advisory. All of the firms are recognizing the opportunity, and you've talked about it a lot on this show, but they don't actually want to go there. They don't want to give up control and give up the billable hour or give up their familiar roles and what they're doing now. And that tension is everywhere. That gap between where they want to be and what they're doing right now and what it takes to get over that chasm. So they don't name it very well, and they certainly don't own that very well.
Yeah. And I think the data really backs up what you're saying. Firms that are growing faster almost always show the clear separation between client work and firm leadership work. Let me ask you another question. When you speak to firm leaders, what patterns are you seeing that are not always obvious in IPA's data?
Well, you talk about what you see in the data for sure. And it's there, it's transparent, it's in black and white. I don't necessarily hear it consistently, but I get a sense of it, just going back to this gap between intention and execution. So leaders are really good at saying the right things and at playing the game and talking about the future. And we're an advisory-led firm and we're very talent-centric and client-focused, and we specialize and cover the niches. But going back to the earlier point about using last year's tech stack for this year's tax season, they're still running the same firm, the same playbook, the same way day to day. So that's a tension that I'm seeing. That's a pattern, if you like. And another one is there's a lot of quiet uncertainty. Do you remember before COVID, we could make 2, 3, 5 year plans? Mm-hmm. There was certainty. And accountants love certainty. They like to know where things are going. But these days, it's hard to make 90-day plans without knowing what's coming up. So there's a lot of quiet uncertainty I'm sensing. Even the confident leaders, they're questioning whether they have a model that will hold up under duress if it's robust enough. And it might be working now, but will it work in 12 months' time? And another aspect of that is they are lacking perspective with that the peers that they're talking to. They need that look over the garden wall. What is that other leader doing to handle that problem? What's working for them? What have they got in their bait box or their medicine cabinet to catch that fish or deal with that problem? And they don't have those peer community groups that are open enough. So it brings a hesitation that doesn't always show up in the data, but you can hear it clearly in the private conversations.
Yeah. And I think I am hearing similar, where there's so many monumental trends converging at one time, and nobody really knows where AI is going to go in the compliance work, or what private equity's impact on accounting firms are going to be. So I think that there's so much uncertainty from so many different directions that it is paralyzing a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, let me give you a question from Mike Hajak, who's a friend of the show. And this is another AI question, but I'm going to flip it to advisory initiatives. And we're talking really about the roadmap for advisory. So Mike Hajak asks this. He comments, in fact, in 2026, is it the year that firms finally take advisory seriously? Because there's no roadmap necessarily, and it's much harder than people expect. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think he's spot on. Advisory isn't a service line. It's really an operating and mind shift change inside of the firms. Most firms are struggling because they try to layer advisory on top of their current compliance engines. They keep the same pricing assumptions, the same utilization expectations, and the same performance metrics. And then they wonder why their advisory services don't scale. Advisory work typically doesn't fit neatly into that billable hour model. It's less predictable, it's more iterative, and it's more relationship driven. And if firms don't adjust how they price their work and how they train their people and really how they're defining their success, advisory ends up feeling like extra work to do instead of the core work that needs to be done.
Yeah. And Mike did an excellent episode for this Inside Public Accounting podcast on advisory and what he's doing with his firm to be very advisory led. So when it comes to advisory, in your view, Chelsea, where do firms usually go wrong first?
Firms are underestimating how many systems need to change all at once. Advisory really requires different skills, listening, framing problems, guiding decisions. But firms often assign advisory to people who were rewarded for speed and precision in compliance work. So without retraining and support, there's a mismatch in skills and prior knowledge and what is needed in the new role. I think firms are also underestimating how uncomfortable it might be for partners. Advisory shifts power dynamics. It requires letting go of certainty and maybe saying, I don't know yet. And that's a hard transition for people who have built their careers on their years of expertise.
That's such an amazing point, because these partners, huge power, tenure, and they'd be doing it a certain way for a number of years, and they're asked to almost be a different animal. As you say, there's different skill sets, different expectations. And this maybe explains, Chelsea, why there's no simple roadmap for advisory.
Yeah. The firms that are making progress may not try to transform everything at once, but they start small, maybe one advisory offering, one client segment, and one internal champion, and they put guardrails around it. Advisory isn't harder because firms aren't capable. It's harder because it asks firms to become something different. And that really takes time and patience and leadership alignment with the goals.
Yeah. I had a story recently about a four-partner firm. So not very big, but one of the partners had said to the other three partners, I want to turn this into an advisory firm, and they wouldn't let him. And he said, well, how about this as a compromise? I will give you all of my clients, all of the compliance work, all of the tax work, and I will just do advisory for my clients, and I'll do advisory for your clients as well. And he ended up building a practice that was much bigger than all the other compliance that the three or four partners were doing together just on his own. So it is the future. You've said that on this show, haven't you?
Yeah. And I think that really, that story highlights the need for that internal champion who really believes in what they're building, but also sets aside that work. I think that was a very important point and part of the success was that that person was able to set aside their compliance work and say, I'm really going to put all my focus on creating something new and doing something different. And ultimately led to success.
We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
So when leaders say we're prepared for the future, what do you think they're underestimating? Because nobody's prepared for the future, are they?
Yeah, I don't think they are. And like I said earlier, I think there's so many different trends converging. And the hardest part is often, it's not deciding what to change. It's sticking with the change long after the novelty wears off of, oh, this new shiny object. And that discomfort comes from the fact that for a while, performance often looks worse. They talk about the J shape. It looks worse before it gets better. Utilization might dip, the margins get messy. People could question the direction that the firm is going. And that's when a lot of firms quietly revert back to what's familiar and safe for them.
Yeah. So we got another question from Rachel Anefsky, who's also been on the show, friend of the show. Great episode. Check that out. She asks, Chelsea, this is for you. What's the single most valuable training course a future CPA leader should take? And I'll give you a beat here because I've been talking to a lot of heads of state societies, and they are trying to build membership through CPE, through the keeping updated with the regulations and the professional qualifications and everything else. And that's what's driving their membership. They want it to be more. But yeah, what in your view is that single most valuable training course for CPA leaders?
I think that's a great question from Rachel. People leadership and business economics. I think you need information outside of technical accounting.
Yeah.
Technical training is really the table stakes. It's what gets you promoted and gets you credibility, but it doesn't prepare future leaders to run a firm. The next generation of leaders has to understand how firms are actually making money, and not just revenue, but the leverage of the firm, margins, pricing, capacity. They need to see how one decision in staffing or scope really ripples through the entire firm.
I use the phrase in some of my talks that good gets you in the game, but great gets you on the podium. And in the same way, the technical skills get you in the game.
Yeah.
They get you the job, but they don't get you in the boardroom. They don't get you the client. They don't get you the kudos, the influence that you deserve. So yeah, I agree with you. It totally goes beyond the technical capability because there are so many great accountants out there that are technically super strong. So it's got to be more than that. And it seems like really it's less about knowing the rules and more about understanding the system and the game.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Most future partners are very good at their work. Far fewer are trained to manage the people or systems. Leadership training really helps them understand incentives, why people behave the way they do, how compensation and promotion decisions shape the culture of the firm, and information on burnout and why turnover isn't just an HR problem, but it's an economic problem. People leadership matters because firms don't stall due to a lack of technical knowledge inside of the firm. They stall because they can't align their people around the change that the firm is going through.
So just to summarize for Rachel, she probably knew this anyway because she's so smart, but the top CPA course that a future leader could take is around people leadership and, of course, business economics. And just to pick up on that, that commercial acumen, that business awareness that goes beyond the technical knowledge and really applying that, that doesn't come naturally. You've got to be really well-read and well-rounded and get good training on that. And we're seeing here, I guess, Chelsea, a big shift in how most leaders were trained because it was always the technical stuff.
Yeah, it is. And that's why so many new partners feel unprepared when they join partnership. Technical skills got them in the room, but the leadership skills are what keeps the firm moving forward and keep people willing to follow you when things get uncomfortable, as they will.
Mm. Okay. Well, Rachel's asked another question. Just greedy, if you ask me, but
it was a good one.
A mentor once said to me, the person in charge of a conversation is the one that's asking the questions. And I thought, well, aren't you in charge if you're the one that's giving the answers? But he said, no, they're the ones that shape where the conversation goes. So thanks, Rachel, for this one as well. So the follow-up is, if you could keep one thing the same in public accounting, what would it be?
Long-term client relationships.
Nice. Public
accounting has been built on trust and often multi-decade trust with their clients. And that continuity allows firms to see the full arc of clients' business and add value over time. Even as the services of the firm might evolve, that trusted advisor role is something that I'd fight really hard to preserve inside of the firm.
Yeah. And I did a series on my own podcast recently, Accounting Voices, talking about the four different firms that are emerging at the moment. And I talked about these continuums, and you can't be an automated firm and lean heavily into the technology, but also retain client intimacy. Mm-hmm. Because the more you lean into the tech, the less you lean into the relationships. It's really difficult. What kind of firm do you want to be? If you want to be truly client-centric, as you suggest in that long-term client relationship, then you can't be too heavily automated and chatbots and everything else.
Because clients are burnt out on that. They don't want to talk to chatbots or automated phone messages. They want to talk to a human who can help them with their problems.
Yeah. So have you got a question for me?
I do. So Rob, what do you think is the hardest decision that you see managing partners actively avoiding right now?
Ooh, that's good. I've been asking this question of managing partners. What's more difficult than people think? But this is a similar kind of question. What's the hardest decision you see managing partners actively evolving right now? Deciding who the firm is not for anymore. So what I mean by that is this firm for clients? Is it for services? Is it for the partners? Firms don't know what they want to be and who they are there for. And they avoid that. And that's where they keep getting stuck. I spoke earlier about the different kinds of firms. If you want to be a private equity-led firm, then you lose independence. And that's a continuum. It's a paradox, if you like. If we want to be client-centric, we can't have a million different services. We've got a niche and go deep with our clients and speak their language. Are we going to be partner-focused? Are we going to move into a different business model? So not just deciding who they want to be, but who they don't want to be. Because often what you say no to defines you more than what you say yes to. So does that chime with what you're seeing?
Yeah, and I like that. And I think along with that, firms have a really hard time saying no to their clients as they're shifting their business models. For clients who may have been with the firm for a long time may just not be a good fit. And getting rid of business is tough. I mean, firms are starting to call clients a little bit more, but getting rid of those relationships is hard. But I think it's necessary and to, you know, shed your skin and become a butterfly.
That's such a great point. When I talk to really busy accountants, and you'll talk to a lot of these as well because they're everywhere. Why are you so busy? Well, we've got too much client work. Well, is it the right kind of work? Would you ever get rid of some clients that you're not doing the right work for, or they're too low margin, or they're the wrong fit for them? Oh, no, we could never get rid of clients. That's too much. So, okay, let's zoom out from clients for a moment. Here's a question for you. Do you think firms underestimate how much change fatigue their people are carrying right now?
Absolutely. And what I think is really striking about this is that it shows up in firms that are performing well financially. People hear, you know, the firm is doing great. Look at our revenue growth. Look at our profitability. And they assume that means the team feels great. And that may not be true. Over the last several years, people have been asked to absorb continuous change, new technologies, service lines, expectations, changes with COVID, new clients, new workflows, and often without anything being taken off of their plates.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Chelsea, we were blessed to have you on a series I did called Accounting Reflections 2025, where I interviewed 48 people. You were one of them. I asked them the same five questions. And question four was, what skills or attributes do leaders need to double down on to be relevant and effective in 2026? And you and a few others mentioned this idea of change management and handling change, but not just managing change, but leading change and setting the example. And you said it beautifully there. It's not one big change. It's an accumulation of different disruptions that you've got to manage on an ongoing basis. There's so much to contend with.
Yeah. And I think change fatigue is not always about resistance, but it's really about the load that the staff are carrying.
Yeah.
It's also about clarifying the why and letting that team know where the firm is headed and the larger goals of the firm, that transparency. What we see in the data and what leaders tell us is that those mid-level staff are really carrying the heaviest burden. They're managing up through uncertainty and managing down through burnout while still being expected to deliver to their clients at the same level.
But in managing and holding on to all of that, not delegating it well, not revealing, you said transparency, what's going on right now, you can see the cracks appearing, can't you, and the elements of stress. And that doesn't send a good message down to people below you and in your team.
No, absolutely not. So let me ask you this question. When firm leaders listen to this podcast a year from now, what do you hope they'll say has changed in the way that they think?
Change. Accountants are not good at change, but they need to change and they need to adapt. I would hope they would say that they stopped waiting for certainty, stopped waiting for everything to be perfect, and they took a step forward and started building anyway. So it's a bit like when you're a parent, Chelsea, and so am I. There's never a perfect time to have a child. There's never a perfect time to launch a business. The firms that win for me are the ones that will proceed without the perfect answers. They'll have some momentum. They'll be a little bit more entrepreneurial. I know accountants are in the business of mitigating risk, but sometimes you can't wait for the stars to align before you make that pivot. So I would hope that in a year's time, they'll have got their heads around that and say, look, sometimes we just got to take that step, take the jump. Would you go along with that?
Yeah. And I think that is especially prevalent with technology. Firms are seeing there's so much technology change going on right now, and they're just stepping back and saying, we'll let somebody else figure it out and then we'll invest. But yeah. That point, you're so far behind where everybody else is that's going to be hard to catch up. So I think taking a step forward in a direction, you know, you just got to take that first step.
Well, technology is such a great example because accountants are very much wait and see. They are lurkers. They wait on the sidelines to see what everyone else is doing and whether it's going to work. That's why they've been so slow to adopt AI. Mm-hmm. Because they're thinking we've not properly made the case for it yet. It might be a flash in the pan, but you and I both know that's not going away. So final question for you then, Chelsea. Are the firms that win this next decade going to look like the firms that won the last one? And you're primed to answer this because you do longitudinal data. You look at the trends over years.
Yes. And, you know, we just said that those 10, 20 year plans are not possible anymore. But some firms will look the same, but I think many won't. And the defining trait in those firms is not going to be their size, but it's going to be the adaptability and the leadership depth. In the last decade, firms won by growing bigger, whether that was through acquisitions or geographic expansion, adding more services, raising their rates. Scale mattered because it created the leverage and the resilience to weather economic changes. But I think in the next decade, scale won't be enough.
So if scale's not enough, what's going to replace scale?
The ability to evolve and continue to evolve. The firms that win will be the ones that can redesign their work repeatedly as technology changes and then develop leaders faster than they promote them. Individuals need to be ready for their role before they get in it. And they're also going to make hard decisions about their clients and services. Hmm. That requires that leadership depth. It's not just a strong managing partner, but multiple leaders at different levels throughout the firm who can carry that change forward and all in the same direction.
So growth's not going to disappear. It'll still be all about the growth. It's just going to be, it will look different. It's a different kind of growth.
Yeah, I think that's true. If there's one theme across all the questions that we've talked about, it's that the future of accounting is unclear. It's also demanding. The data doesn't just give firms a roadmap, but it gives them better questions to ask, to take that first step.
Yes, I'm fond of saying, if you think change is hard, try not changing. So that's a message that we leave you with on this show. And we keep doing that here. We give you the information and why the information matters and give it to you in this Inside Public Accounting podcast. If you've got questions you want us to tackle in a future episode, do send them in. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave some feedback for us on the show. We'd love to know what you think we should cover in future episodes.
Thanks for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. We'll see you next time.